suggestion of staying near the side and making them dive over your work?
Yes and no.
How so?
Sometimes it worked and I could catch their heels, but other times they dove right on top of me.
But you survived.
Barely. You know what, Grandpa?
What?
Grandma says she doesn't wear girdles. She's never worn a girdle in her life.
Really? Well, geez, how could I be mistaken about that? Maybe you better go and look and see what's in that box.
Where is it? Is it still in the bedroom?
Behind the couch. You don't need it. It's just scotch tape. Just pull the end open.
Oh boy, swim fins and a scuba diving mask.
I didn't get you a snorkel. I figured that will come later.
Wow, thank you, Grandpa.
Well, that's from your grandma, too.
Thank you, Grandma.
Well, Grandpa, they won't let me wear these until why?
I know, but I spoke to the owner of the Bowsprit Motel, and he said I can take you there and you can try them out. It will help you develop your leg muscles and learn to kick properly.
Yellow.
Right, you have to
the
wait
whole
now.
The world is yellow.
Set that stuff aside everything. So you can eat your lunch.
Can I leave the mask on if I promise to eat?
Yes. All right, here's your PB&J, chicken noodle soup, and there's your milk.
Not chocolate?
No, not chocolate today. We've been rationed. Now, where were we? Let's see. Oh, yes, yes. Andy, the albino mouse. Who, though his birthday is still a week off, has been granted the privileged assignment to fetch the flame off the altar and light the celebratory candle in the lair. Grandfather Mouse, decreeing that since the bounty of crumbs left behind by the humans' potluck festivities this week was so abundant that they should splurge and have two celebrations this year, one pre-birthday and one birthday. Soon afterwards, from that familiar gap between two baseboards, an unlit straw protrudes, followed a second or two later by the pink nose and the white whiskers of its bearer. Andy ventures out a few steps under the vaulted ceiling. Cautiously, he checks in both directions, searching for the cat. But the cat is nowhere to be found. Determines the coast is clear, then stealthily scurrying to the altar, where he leaps and catches his front claws on the hem of the white linen tablecloth, then hauls himself up, the way a gymnast will climb a rope in gym class. Then, at the top, when the table turns level, he rushes for its only cover, which is the base of the candlestick itself. There he reprises his circus act, balancing and teetering and carefully climbing the slippery, shiny metal. He surmounts the golden pedestal, where, upon reaching this ledge, he pauses to rest and looks up at his goal. Flaming pinnacle burning bright. And since his straw's not yet alight, there is no hurry, excepting for Grandfather Mouse's growing concern back at the lair. Andy allows himself to take a break and glance below. His little pink mouse eyes are arrested by an unusual sight. The cat. You know, nothing particularly arresting about that, especially since the cat often can be seen near the grate, and the grate is the location to which he is known to gravitate, whenever the furnace has been running and then shut off. He loves to luxuriate in the warm exhales, rising up through the wrought iron latticework, although it has already once proved a hazard to his health, owing to his artificial leg, tapered like a cribbage peg and rounded on its end, which, as everyone knows, especially women in high heels and those who have ever jammed a round peg in a square hole, they are apt to get stuck in grates. which the unfortunate cat discovered, much to his chagrin, much to his woe, the first time he stepped on the grate and it wouldn't let go. So he had spent the night tugging and pulling and howling and meowing in misery. Until the next morning, when a human finally found him and freed him. From the candlestick top, Andy's first thought, based on the cat's body language, was that he had done it again, gotten stuck on the grate. Only trouble was, he wasn't standing on the grate, nor even much near it, a good 6 to 8 feet away, and he was facing it with a look that was intense. What could he be looking at? Suddenly, just then, the cat reacted with a hiss and a jump and landed with an arch to its back like the Arc de Triomphe. Surprise sends Andy scurrying behind the candle for cover. Peeking out, he has to ponder, what is eating this cat?
The snake.
Something. But what? For Andy, the mystery remains unsolved, but he knows if he delays much longer, it will really worry his grandfather. So he takes only a few seconds more to stare at the grate. What was it about it that caused the cat to react like that? Of course we know, and owing to the distance and the dim lighting, naturally it is impossible for Andy Mouse to make out a jet black snake lying on top of a coal black grate. It would be like trying to differentiate a licorice stick in a coal mine, or a top hat floating in a vat of blackstrap molasses. Such things can't be seen because they blend with the background. And even though we know it's lying down there, Andy doesn't. Just as well, or he might never climb down from the candlestick or venture off the table. Andy gives up on studying the grate. It's time, once again, to concentrate on the mission at hand. Climb the candle and quickly bring the flame back to the lair to prevent any further graying of Grandfather's hair. Standing up, he gives the candle a big bear hug, digging his claws into the soft tallow wax. Then, like a lumberjack, begins hooching up the candle column, head to one side, pursed lips supporting a javelin toothpick. Ear pressed to wax like he's listening for a heartbeat, he keeps hooching and hooching until he begins to feel a slight warming to the top of his head, signaling he's approaching the flame. He stops climbing and looks up with his chin. Doing so, swipes his straw across the lip of the candle, puncturing the molten pool of wax beneath the flame, and, like rupturing a membrane, it sends a hot trickle of lava flowing down onto Andy's head, scalding him and causing him to break his hold and fall all the way down to the white tablecloth. He picks himself up and surveys the damage. The scalding burn stings like having touched the side of a hot tea kettle.
I know. I learned my lesson.
And the wax, which fell on his head and is now congealing, half covers his face, making him look as though he's on his way to audition for the title role of Phantom of the Opera. However, undaunted, and just like his paw, Andy shakes himself off and picks up the straw. This time, with no lava pool to drain, he's able to reach up and touch the straw to the flame. Instantly, the race is on. Clock becomes a stopwatch. Straw is shortening fast. Andy shinnies down the candle pole and slides down the soapy brass, dropping to linen cloth. He crosses to the edge, nearly parachuting off. His nails stretch down the tablecloth. Then at the hem, he lets go and drops, softly splaying on the floor with a plop. But he's up again immediately and heading for the mouse house door. He's having trouble with his vision, with one eye occluded by a mask of wax and the other blinkered by the nearness of the flame. Because of these visual handicaps, Andy moves about in a confused and drunken manner, zigging left and zagging right. What's more confusing, there seems to be a shadow moving along with him, or along behind him, more precise. But he can't tell. It is just beyond his peripheral vision. Something, or is it just his imagination? He can't be certain, but it's scaring him. And he wants to run faster, but he can't, for he knows, transporting the open flame, it must be steady as you go. There it is again, a shadowy shadow shadowing him, but remaining inside the darkness, just outside the pool of light.
Calm down, calm down. So the shadow is tailing you. That's normal. After all, you've got a light, you've got flame. It's throwing shadows. Nothing unusual about that. It's to be expected. That's how shadows are made, and that's what shadows do. They tag along.
True, except as Peter Pan and other cat burglars have always known, there is nothing wrong with a shadow following you, provided it's your own.
He wasn't a cat burglar. Peter Pan wasn't a cat burglar.
Well, no, he didn't start out one, but he ended up one. His grandfather was a bad influence on him, you see.
No.
Oh, yes, it's true.
No, I don't believe that.
Grandpa, you tell too many stories. Keep reading.
Yes.
You better keep reading.
Nothing wrong with having a shadow following you, provided it's your own. Feeling asthmatic and with rising panic, Andy increases his speed as much as he dares, thinking to himself, "Where is the door? Where is the door? Please, I should have reached it by now." At last, he stumbles upon it and instantly thrusts himself through and disappears. As for the pursuing shadow, it pulls up like a rolling wave, crests against the baseboard, then sheers off and shies away, evidencing no desire to play with fire nor flirt with flambé. The snake, still famished, finds and devours a desiccated cricket, dry as the husk of a June bug on a screen. Its brittle body crunches as it goes down. Scarcely nutritious and not at all delicious, it is mere roughage. But these two items represent the entirety of the snake's midnight snack, for the building is cooling down and the cold is seeping in. In the dark furnace room, the snake slithers up the side of the warm tree trunk and onto one of its low-lying branches, where gradually, as the room's residual heat dwindles to zero, the snake transforms like a theater. Its house lights go dim as its body stiffens, and it once more slips into the dreamless void of a deep winter slumber. That's perfect timing. Here's your bus.
Tell Grandma I was the one who found her.
I'll tell her. Give your mother my love.
I will. Thanks for telling me this story.
You're very welcome, Andy. I'll see you next week. Most remarkable lad. Ah,